call the House Committee on Trade and Economic Development to order. Welcome and thank you for coming. I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 2691. And since I am a co-sponsor with Senator Metzger of this bill, I would like to go down and present my testimony. And I will have the gavel to Representative Bergman. And Kim, while I'm doing that, maybe you can explain about our bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2691 would allow a city or county to rezone or redevelop an abandoned or diminished wood mill site for industrial use without taking exception to land use planning goals regarding agricultural and forest lands, public facilities, and urbanization. This would require the wood mill be abandoned or diminished as of the effective date of the Act to be considered for rezoning or redevelopment. It would prohibit the Land Conservation and Development Commission from adopting restrictions on the size of structures or the boundaries of the mill site rezoned or redeveloped for industrial use, and would allow a city or county to determine the boundary of the mill site to be rezoned or redeveloped.
And it's our pleasure today to hear testimony first from our chair, Representative Patty Smith, and Senator Metzger.
Well, thank you. Chair Berger. Sounds funny to say that.
Good.
Seems funny to sit here.
Do we have the mics up? Because I can't hear.
Can you hear back there?
You can't hear me?
Can you hear?
Can you hear me now?
Okay. Thank you.
Just kidding.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon. I'm Representative Patty Smith. I represent House District 52, and I'm here today as a co-sponsor with Senator Rick Metzger of House Bill 2691. I have provided you with written testimony, and I'm not going to read it, but what I want to tell you is that this is a crucial piece of legislation for all of Oregon and to put Oregonians back to work. I guess we've heard numerous times how many jobs we are losing in this state and revenues are down, and as we struggle with these budgets, I see the only answer is to restore our economy, and one way is to create jobs. So this is an incremental step in increasing our supply of industrial lands. It will be especially helpful to rural parts of our state that have suffered significantly from the loss of mill operations. I might also point out that we've just received a bit of information from Paul Eniger and Associates, and I haven't really had time to go through it, and the committee has been provided with that, on the number of closed Oregon mills across this state. And the total, if you look at the last page, is 164. So I guess it just underlies the need for this kind of legislation. Oregon's terrain is as diverse as its population. What works in one locality may not work in another. However, giving local communities the opportunity to invite new industry to develop former mill sites that were once vibrant but are no longer contributing to this economy is an essential step toward making more industrial land available. And that's what this bill does, and I think you're going to hear from testimony that that's what this bill will do. Does not seek to amend the goals intended for the protection of our agriculture or forest lands. This is critical in this state because we all value our ag and our forest lands. But we have these mill sites sitting around Oregon, sitting there with infrastructure, not putting people to work. And I think that is our focus and where we need to go. So I would urge your support of this House Bill 2691. One of the most significant things that I might point out that this bill will do is to extend sewer and water facilities to these industrial sites. Extension of sewer and water is not only critical to industrial facilities, but protects our environment from less desirable septic systems. So I guess with that, I will close and let you read the information, and I'd be glad to ask and answer any questions after Senator Metzger has given his testimony. Thank you.
Senator Metzger, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee, and Chairwoman, and my famed state rep, Patty Smith. Thanks for the opportunity to be here today, and it is with great pleasure that House Bill 2691 is before you today, and that Representative Smith and I have had an opportunity to bring that forward to you. I know the work that you're doing in your committee, of course, paralleling the work that we're doing over in the Senate side in economic development. Today, on the floor, as you know, we passed Senate Bill 2 on an expedited basis, which will soon come to you, and hopefully for the same expedited work, to extend unemployment benefits to many Oregonians who working are very hard to find jobs, but because of our jobless recovery that we're having in Oregon, not able to find productive work. So that's an important element. But the long-term element is, of course, putting people back to work and providing jobs in the state. Good-paying jobs, manufacturing jobs, service jobs, just the opportunity to, you know, provide for the family and provide for the economic stability of Oregon. That's what your focus with your committee is, and my members also in the Senate. And this is a first step towards that. Industrial land is a critical aspect of moving Oregon forward in the years ahead. And we will be working on some things on the Senate side that you will see later on a broader piece of industrial land. This is one of the best opportunities we can to move quickly, however, is to look at abandoned mill sites. And if you look at that list that Representative Smith has provided you, and I think most of your communities will have examples there, you're talking about sites that are as close to what we call shovel-ready or market-ready as any industrial land that we have in the state of Oregon. One of the real problems that we have in terms of providing industrial land is that you can say, yeah, we have X amount of acres of industrial land in this sector or that sector of Oregon, but when a business comes in to say, well, can I start building next month? It's, well, it's going to take us 5 or 6 years to go through everything that we have to do to actually make that ready for you to be able to move your company here. Well, obviously, that's not going to work. There are states out there right now that are marketing what truly are market-ready industrial sites, where if you come here and move your company here, you can start building in 3, 4, 5 months, and we don't have that ability. So it makes a lot of sense to look at sites that are already there. You know, we have an example, and you, as you have examples as well, in our district in which we have sites. You know, the Hanna Lumber site is the one that immediately brought our attention in Odell, in which because of the forest products losses that we all have experienced, here you have a site with water, and it's in, you know, on a major highway, exactly what you need. But because of the finite limitation in the law that these industrial sites, mill sites, are for, quote, you know, agricultural or timber-related businesses, that sounded good when the law was written, because probably no one ever thought we'd stop cutting timber and we wouldn't have the opportunity to provide that. And yet here we have a site that's able to do that. In our district, we have a major manufacturer, Cardinal Glass, that has signed, you know, wants to come. You know, Hood River has one of the highest unemployments in the state of Oregon. And here is an opportunity to come, and they need a site. And here's a site that can provide that. In your districts, you'll have those same examples. I've seen them in Estacada. There's, you know, a huge plate, a site, the Vanport site in Boring, that went out of business a couple of years ago, right there in Damascus, where all the growth is going to be coming, and they're looking for industrial sites for the growth in Clackamas County, and here you have those sites. This will provide that flexibility in order to bring companies here. This gentleman here, James, worked at Hanna Lumber and was laid off when they went out of business, and has been looking, you know, for a job, has been unable to find one. You know, he's got an application in now for the new business, you know, with Cardinal Glass in the manufacturing sector. These are the types of things that we can do, and this bill provides that opportunity to take the most market-ready industrial sites already, you know, used for industrial site as industrial manufacturing for many, many years. Most are located on or near major traffic corridors because of their prior use. So they are absolutely perfect to meet the goals. And would urge the you know, committee's consideration of this bill and so that it can work for Oregonians, put people back to work, and tell businesses elsewhere that Oregon not only is open for business, but we have the opportunity to actually make you take advantage of the site. And, Madam Vice Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to come and testify.
I appreciate that you're here. Questions from the committee? Mr. Marsh.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair, and Madam Chair, and Senator. Thank you for coming. I think this is an excellent concept. It will open up a lot of other opportunities. I just want to note for the record that not all of these mills were closed due to the spotted owl, since a lot of them are not in spotted owl territory, and a number of them were closed for functional obsolescence, and nobody's going to go and put the investment into some of those old mills to bring them up to today's standards. So it's about time we use some of those sites for some other economic development. I appreciate the concept. We'll look at the details, but I think it's a really good step, and I just wanted to make that comment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments, questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, we're waiting for our chair to come back and assume her duties. David Harlan, Port of Hood River, is next to testify.
you. Welcome. And for the record, you need to state your name. Go ahead.
I'm Dave Harlan. I'm the executive director of the Port of Hood River. And I've got Mike Benedict, Hood River County Planner, with me today, and Bill Fashing, Hood River County Economic Development Coordinator. I'm thankful for the opportunity to appear in front of you today and speak in favor of House Bill 2691. I've been with the Port about 3 years. Prior to that, I was a regional development officer for the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. Before that, I ran the Mid-Columbia Economic Development District. Prior to that, I was the marketing manager of the Port of Astoria. And prior to that, I was a reporter. If you've been to our community in the last few years, hopefully you found it attractive. It has a prosperous look, and there are a lot of folks in town who are, in fact, prosperous. But don't let looks fool you. That prosperity does not extend to the majority of the residents of Hood River County. If you're working for wages in our county, you're not doing quite so well. Like a lot of rural economies around the state, our unemployment is higher and our income levels lower than urban Oregon. Our December unemployment number was 9.4% compared to a statewide figure of 7% compared to a national figure of 5.7%. Believe it or not, that's an improvement. Last August, in the height of our summer tourism season, we posted a 12.6% unemployment rate. Hood River County's average wage and salary income in the year 2000 ranked 35th out of 36 Oregon counties. The figure was $21,493. That's less than a third of the statewide average of $32,776 and a lot less than a third of the average for Multnomah County of $36,797. Throw on top of that some pretty high housing costs, and you have a picture of paradise, a picture of poverty in paradise, rather. The most current median home value that I'm aware of in Hood River is $151,400. The statewide figure is $151,100. You add all these things together, and one of the results you get is a high rate of poverty, a high rate of children living in poverty. That, unfortunately, is not particularly unusual for isolated rural counties hundreds of miles away from population centers. But I would argue that it's pretty unusual for a rural county located immediately adjacent to the largest population center in the state on an interstate highway less than an hour away from an international airport. Some of our problems are structural. We've got a relatively labor-intensive ag industry that tends to hold down wages, and our growers are under an intense pressure from overseas competition. Those producers can have a lower cost of production. We've got a lot of service jobs that, like the ag jobs, tend to be seasonal and tend not to pay top dollar. But more importantly, we've got a very limited land base that limits opportunities for diversifying our economy. Because of that, we have not been a fit for virtually any of the state leads coming down through OECD. And the flip side of that is that we also face a challenge in trying to provide space for new and expanding businesses. The Hood River County Economic Development Plan has identified having ready-to-go industrial sites as critical to retaining existing firms in our city and diversifying the economy. We've got some industrial land in Cascade Locks. That's important to the county and the region, but it's not enough. The Port of Hood River is the proud owner of the entire 20-year inventory for the city of Hood River, all 10 acres of it, split between two sites. We haven't had the ability to site a modest size firm in our community for a long time, and only recently, as we'll get to, have we began talking about being able to site a modest size business in our community. Because we have a limited supply of industrial land, the land that the port has acquired within the urban growth boundary is relatively high cost compared to surrounding communities. What that means is when local firms outgrow their facilities, they have had to look elsewhere. If you're the local beer distributor and you're running out of space, you face moving to the Dalles or to another community, or you pay two or three times the cost for your land. Because of that land differential between our community and surrounding communities, that land cost differential, we've had a number of businesses leave town. Sometimes they stay in the region, sometimes they've left the state. I attended the Community Development Forum in December in Portland, and there was a lot of talk about the lack of industrial land in the urban area. That's a problem communities all over this state share. I'm also here to tell you that moving the urban growth boundary doesn't necessarily fix that problem in all cases. You do it in our case, you get more residential, you get some ag land, you get a few scattered commercial sites, but you don't solve the industrial land shortage. We've had great fortune in the last month or two to have a wonderful company announce plans to site at Odell, Cardinal Glass Industries. That plant will pay family wages, and they will have a complete benefit package. They will employ 50 to 75 people initially, and potentially down the road double or more of that. The 52-acre lower handle mill site is roughly 6 miles south of Hood River, just outside of the unincorporated community of Odell. Odell is served by a sewer district because it is a center of fruit packing. So away in the distance are large 150,000-square-foot buildings that are hooked up to sewers. That site represents the best opportunity for my community to add industrial land capacity in the near term. It's already developed. There's large buildings left over from the mill operation. There are pipes in the ground. A portion of the site is paved. There is more than adequate water and electrical service on site. The sewer service is across the road, about 2,300 feet away. We are in the process of trying to make it possible for Cardinal to hook up to that sewer pipe. Most companies are not typically prepared to face what they perceive as the uncertainty of certain processes. Protracted processes with uncertain outcomes usually mean no sale. Because they are an unusual company, because they like Hood River, because their product requires that they have a site located between 600 and 1,600 feet above sea level to make their product, Cardinal Glass has decided the lower handle mill is where they want to be. We've gotten a lot of support from the state on this, including some folks in this room. But the reality is that except for the current dire economic situation, we wouldn't be here today talking about Cardinal Glass. In all likelihood, the company would not have considered the lower handle site. That's because these former mill sites have, outside of the urban growth boundaries, have been off limits, and only very recently has it been kosher to talk about redeveloping them as light industrial sites. My community and other communities around the state need to be able to take advantage of these former mill sites for their economies to be sustainable. We're not talking about promoting sprawl development. We're not talking about extending services for long distances. The bottom line is that sort of thing is not cost effective. I'm sorry, you know, not all these sites are going to be created equal. Kinzu mill site outside in Wheeler County is a long, long way from urban services. But the state needs to look at all sides of the industrial lands issue and help rural communities help themselves. We are very optimistic that the Cardinal Glass project will come off as planned, but beyond this opportunity, we need to be able to redevelop the remainder of the lower handle mill site to provide jobs for our residents, and we need to do it in a way that supports good land use planning, because we believe good land use planning is a competitive advantage for bringing companies to this state. We just think it needs to be adjusted. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harlan. Any questions? Mm-hmm. Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, a couple of questions, if you would. Did you say the handle site was what kind of a?
It was a sawmill.
It was a sawmill. And what kind of glass are they doing that has that restriction?
They assemble insulated glass panels. So essentially, it doesn't go into the frame, and they don't produce the glass there. But they cut it, and they put it in I call it a cassette, and they inject the argon gas between the two panels or the three panels, and they have to be able to go both downhill and uphill. And so this is an unusual plant. It has to be sited at a particular point above sea level.
Isn't that interesting?
The seal serves, I'm Bill Fashing, sorry to add it in, but the seal serves as the insulating barrier for high efficiency windows. And if you construct these at a lower elevation, then you take them up in the mountains, the seal is compromised and you lose the insulation value. So that elevation is critical.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other
questions for Mr. Hartman?
Go ahead, Bill. Section manager.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Harlan, what do the, you know, this is an area, as I recall, near pear orchards, apple orchards, et cetera. And is there any fear from sort of the farmers that by having this sewer pipeline and urban services available to the site that it will put pressure on the farm properties there?
I have not heard a word. And let me tell you, getting consensus on issues in Hood River County can be a struggle. But on this particular project, we've had people who have often been, you know, perceived as being on the anti-growth side of things come out in support of it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Go ahead, Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, committee members. Bill Fashing, I'm the Hood River County Economic Development Coordinator. I have prepared comments that I'm not going to present to you because most of it has already been said. Dave and I did not necessarily coordinate our presentations, but we said very much similar things. I do have it in written form, and I'll leave here before I leave today for you. But bottom line, this is a very critical element of economic development in not only Hood River County, but I think statewide. If we are unable to open up these lands for industrial uses, we're going to continue to face major challenges in attracting new investment and in maintaining, as Dave said, existing business investment in our communities. Hood River County is not, I don't think, that unique as far as the constraints we have on us, although we have some others with the Scenic Act and some other issues. But the difficulty in siting a plant is extremely high. There just isn't available land in the county, and I know in many other counties, without using some of these mill sites, and state regulations today just make it very, very difficult to access those sites and make them viable for a business in this day and age in the time frame that they need.
Thank
and with
you.
That, again, I'd be glad to answer any additional questions you may have, or maybe we go right to Mike, and if he has any comments he wants to make.
Any questions for Mr. Fashing? I have one.
Okay.
Do you have any idea what's going to happen to Hanel, lumber, lower Hanel, if we don't do this?
It will probably sit empty a while longer until we get something done.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mike.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Mike Benedict. I'm the Planning Director for Hood River County. I'm also the Vice President of the Association of Oregon County Planning Directors, but I'm here strictly on behalf of the county today. I have no prepared statements. I did help derive part of this bill, though, so if you have any questions on what our intent was, my intent, I'm sure Representative Smith may have other intents, but I'll be here to answer those questions.
I think for us, you might explain the Dash 3 amendments just to make sure everyone understands them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sure. The amendments that we suggested to the original bill speak primarily to Hood River County. That was my aim. We have three mill sites in Hood River County, both the lower Hanel mill site that we've been talking about, the original upper Hanel mill site, and another called the D mill site, which was a hardboard and some sawmill, I believe. Each of those three sites are zoned industrial, and so the original bill spoke only to rezoning. And what we were concerned with was the redevelopment of those sites with the same constraints that a rezone would have as far as extending services and the size of the buildings, the restricted sizes that Goal 14 brings to the state. And that was the primary purpose of the changes that we asked to be made.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Representative Mark?
Thank you. Madam Chair, Mr. Benedict?
Yes.
Does the county have any plans? This is a 52-acre site, and the other two sites, are they connected?
No, they're quite dispersed.
Okay. But would the county have any plans that to change the zoning and the surrounding zoning? I assume it's all EFU?
Primarily forest around the other two sites. We have no intent. They're industrial sites. They're good sites. Both are near state highways. One is next to a railroad. And so we would like to utilize those strictly for industrial because of our limited industrial base.
But and this site?
The lower handle mill site, the one where Cardinal Glass is going, we have no intent to rezone. We do have a current action to include that site in an unincorporated community of Odell.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you very much. Next, I'd like to call Harlan Levy.
Good afternoon, Chair Smith, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Harlan Levy, staff attorney for the Oregon Association of Realtors. I'm here to support House Bill 2691. We think this is a very important bill, and we are happy to offer our support to it. The Oregon Association of Realtors is an association, trade association of approximately 13,000 realtor members statewide. We do have members in the Hood River County that would be affected by this, and they are in support. This bill addresses a very real problem around the state, and that is the problem of abandoned mill sites. What can we do with these large facilities that are restricted in the way they can be redeveloped? And I look at this bill as a good planning bill, because these sites usually have infrastructure associated with them. They may have water, they may have sewer, they may have access to railroads, they may have access to roads, electric power, et cetera. So we should be redeveloping these sites as opposed to looking at greenfields that don't have all of this infrastructure in place when we want to site these industrial uses. And you heard some testimony earlier from Representative Smith and Senator Metzger regarding shovel-ready. I mean, I couldn't think of a more shovel-ready site out there than a mill site that already is on the ground with these infrastructure improvements in place, ready to be sold and ready to be put into production. In any event, you may hear some testimony later about the exceptions process and why doesn't a property owner just take an exception, the county take an exception to statewide planning goals and work within the process. What is this bill necessary for? Our response to that would be that process is very long, very wieldy, somewhat expensive, and can be subject to appeals, and not the most effective way to get what needs to be done in a timely manner. Why take an exception to the norm when the norm ought to be these sites should be zoned industrial? The exceptions process is a way, is an end run around the statewide land use system, and this ought to be inherent within the system. Finally, just wanted to say that you know, we've heard talk about you know, the economic problems the state is having. It's not good what is happening around the state of Oregon with respect to the lack of economic development and investment. And this bill is a definite step in the right direction. You will be creating the potential for jobs in the woods. And these are jobs that are very important to a lot of our rural communities that, you know, did not experience the growth that the metropolitan area has experienced over the past 10 years. So in conclusion, just wanted to say that this is an excellent piece of legislation. It's good public policy. I thank the chair for bringing it forward, and we offer our full support to it. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Berger.
And Mr. Levy, we've heard a good example with the Odell Cardinal Glass proposal. Do you or your organization, are you aware of other such specific examples in other parts of the state where there are people interested in industrial mills that without this kind of enabling would probably be discouraged?
Chair Smith, Vice Chair Berger, I get anecdotal stories all the time. You do have a list of the industrial sites the abandoned mill sites in the state. I have heard stories from some of my members, particularly along the coast, where there are abandoned mill sites that were once in production of wood products that are sitting there vacant and that they cannot be redeveloped due to a lot of the problems that this bill would address. I'd be happy to research that for this committee and see what I can come up with and get specific examples.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jessica Harris.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jessica Harris, and I'm here today on behalf of the Associated General Contractors. We're a trade association of approximately 1,100 general specialty and supplier contractors throughout the state of Oregon, including in rural areas throughout the state. We're here today to provide our full support for this bill, which we view as the best recycling program we've seen in a long time. It doesn't make sense to us why we wouldn't go first to abandoned mill sites to redevelop them or other abandoned industrial property to redevelop those sites before we open up new ones for development. This makes sense. This is good land use planning. This is good economic development. And because you've heard a lot of other people say exactly the same thing I would say, I'll stop now unless you have any questions.
Okay. Any questions for Jessica?
Thank
you very much. Bob Rindy. Welcome. Hello.
Madam Chair, I've offered to have economic development come up here with us.
Great.
My name is, for the record, I'm Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. And I wanted to start off reminding you, I hope you all saw it, but we delivered a report to all the legislators at the beginning of the session that was produced by an interim committee that we staffed in conjunction with Department of Economic Development. And that was the Commercial Industrial Land Supply Committee put in place by House Bill 3557 last session. It was a very exciting project, and we gathered together a number of experts on economic development from around the state and examined this industrial land supply issue really before all of this that's happening to us hit. I guess we have to give Mr. Chandler the credit for the foresight to start that process. But now, as the economic downturn is upon us, the recommendations from that committee, I think, are very important. And we have been scrambling with a lot of different partners and other interests to try to implement them. I apologize. I often carry that report around with me. It's amazing how many times I'm in a meeting and I end up having to give it away, and I didn't walk out of the office alone this morning. But if you do want some more of those, I would be happy to provide them to you. The report did focus on the fact that the land use planning system generally, it has for 30 years now, focused on providing a 20-year supply of industrial land, but land use rules and goals have not really focused on shovel-ready industrial sites. It's not something that had really come up in the past, but it is probably the number one problem that committee identified. And we are now in a process of trying to go back and figure out the fastest way to gain shovel-ready industrial sites for Oregon. That's not going to be done through rules. There'll be a lot of different efforts that will get us there. But to that extent, we will be working closely with the Community Solutions Team. We've worked closely with the Governor's Office to try to identify some efforts. And we have a working group of many interests right now trying to craft legislation along those lines. At the same time as this particular issue came up, We also were aware of the site in Odell, and our field representatives have been working with the county to fast-track land use planning process the county will have to go through in order to make that happen as soon as possible. I think in the very near future, the exceptions process that Mr. Levy was just talking about will be completed. It's taken us a very short period of time. I know there's often people talk about the exceptions process, but really if one sits down and does it, as we discovered, you can write it in a very brief time, and I expect that will be approved in the near future. But that's not to say anything about this bill. I think this bill is good. We have been looking at these kind of changes. We will have an emergency rulemaking in front of LCDC in 3 weeks here to respond to some of the recommendations from the 3557 committee to adjust our rules. And I think when that is adopted, and that's as fast as one can go through the state rule process, I believe. when that is done, and presumably we will take our time and do some more long-term thinking about other changes, but that in the near future, I think that would probably resolve these problems. Again, I think the bill itself is another avenue that we want to support. There are other bills that we have seen in the building right now that are being considered along these issues, and for that reason alone, I might suggest that perhaps we should have some sort of work group, and I certainly don't want to slow this down or other things down, but it might be helpful if we could gather those together and see if there's a single or a couple of vehicles that will move most of those issues, sort through those issues, and see where we have. I think we have consensus on many of them, and there may be other things that can be done quickly. For this bill, again, we are in support of this bill. There are some wording things that we would suggest, and I'm not going to go into those unless you have some questions, but there are minor things. But I think we can, in our view anyway, resolve some issues we have with some simple word changes. And so we would be asking whether we might have an opportunity to take a quick break and do that at some point here. But I think those kinds of things that Mr. Levy mentioned to you about the fact that we have mill sites all over the state that may be impeded by statewide rules, I don't think the 3557 committee did any finger pointing. The fact is that things have changed today from where they were at the time 20, 25 years ago when most of the land use planning was done in the state and under statewide goals that were addressing issues that were pertinent then. But now things are different. There are many, many changes that we should consider and we will consider quickly, as quickly as we can, to make sure that shovel-ready industrial sites are available statewide. Many of those will probably be mill sites, but there are certainly problems in urban areas as well that we are trying to resolve. So with that, I'll stop and take any questions if you have any.
Go ahead, let's see, guidance.
Can you just clarify for me that your interpretation is that last session the legislature passed a bill that there need to be a 20-year supply of industrial land, but that does not mean that it needs to be shovel ready? I mean, that's what I thought I heard you say.
I hope I didn't say that wrong. The 20-year supply of industrial land provision has been, it's in statute and in LCDC goals, and it's been there for maybe even for 25 years. Those rules require local governments to plan for industrial land. The process has not clearly, at least the implementation has not resulted in something that is shovel ready. That term hasn't really been before us in the past. The administrative rules that LCDC has for industrial siting speak primarily to identifying 20-year supply of industrial land, to zoning that in a way that will encourage industry to provide public services and transportation to those sites. But those rules don't speak to having something that is ready in 6 months. That's never been, at least, been before us as an issue. Many local governments there's certainly nothing that prevents that, and there are certainly local governments that have attempted to do that, but the state has not in any manner required local governments to do that throughout this process.
So that's a yes? They're different?
I think so.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative March?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Rindy, you mentioned a number of their bills on similar topic. Could you get a list of those to us so we could kind of take a look at them and see what should be pulled together? And then secondly, you mentioned some specific concerns or language that you might suggest for this. Could you provide that to us?
Chair, Representative March, I'll do that.
I might add, Representative March, that there are several other bills, especially industrial land bills, and we are trying to put them all together, and they will be before this committee.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative March, we have a work group that's already been working about 3 weeks now on many of the issues surrounding the Commercial Industrial Land Supply Report, and we've been trying to resolve or reach agreement with the work group on something that will result in, I think, even some bills that you don't see yet. And I'm not suggesting that this particular issue be brought to that group, although that's certainly one option. Or we could create a different group, but I think a work group would quickly be able to sort through these bills. And it would be my hope that we could bring one bill that has everything in it or something like that.
Well, let me ask that maybe a different way then. Do you see some specific problems in this kind of an approach in that we're capturing land that may be next to an urban area but not included, or some land is far away from an urban area? Do you see some particular approaches in the way we're doing this, problems that could surface later on and come back to bite us, so to speak?
Chair, Representative Marsh, the problems that we're mainly concerned about have to do with public facilities. A lot of rural mill sites are, as you heard earlier, are a long way from services. I think possibly Mr. Fox is going to address this. I mean, a lot of public money supports services, and unfortunately, we don't have an infinite supply of that money. We're going to have to be very strategic in how we spend our limited dollars to bring online as fast as possible market-ready, shovel-ready industrial sites. And it's likely that's going to be a mix of rural and urban sites. The concern would be we certainly wouldn't want to siphon too much of the public money away on too many sites that are scattered far from services, therefore very expensive to serve, and possibly many of them not very attractive to the market. To the extent that sites are closer in, they are more marketable, they are easier to serve and cheaper to serve. So that's I think the primary concern we have. I think the definition of a mill site is pretty broad here. I talked with the Department of Forestry this morning, and they were concerned that, at least as it's currently worded, you might have hundreds and hundreds of parcels in the forest where somebody had something that we don't mean to be capturing by this, but I think that's a minor problem. That would be another concern.
Thank you.
I think that would be a minor problem too. Representative Richardson?
Madam Chair, Mr. India, I also, as you know, serve on the Environment and Land Use Committee, and what I'm seeing, having been here for 7 weeks, you know, so now I'm a veteran of almost 8 weeks, but I'm seeing that there are a number of bills that are intending to try and micromanage your department, essentially, and this is one of them. And yet, as I've looked at statutes, I'm looking at goals compliance 197-230, and it talks about Department of Land Conservation and Development, NLCDC, and it says that your goal will be to assess economic and property interests and so forth, and it says to make findings of statewide need for the adoption of new goals and so forth. And so what I'm wondering is there an attempt in the department to anticipate these needs, since nobody in the state would know more about these need, these ideas and these interests and these issues than your department? Is there an intent to help solve them and come to us with solutions? That we've seen this as a problem, and we want to suggest that we make these changes, or that we're going to change these rules so that these changes can be made, rather than having individual bills keep coming up that are trying to fix the department and make it more user-friendly, citizen-friendly. You know, we have this tremendous movement toward economic development and this need for it, and it's viewed that LCBC and the department are a hindrance to that instead of a partner in it. And so I'm just wondering, is there action being taken in the department to help anticipate needs and solve them before they have to be brought bill by bill by bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Richardson, certainly that the Land Conservation and Development Commission it does its best to try and see these problems in advance. As you learned, I'm sure, in your brief time here, land use is something that achieving consensus is immensely difficult. And I think that is part of the reason why you will continue to see small micromanaging type of bills. I'm afraid that almost every issue that LCDC, which is a seven-member lay citizens who try to resolve land use issues throughout the state, whatever issue they get into and reach a conclusion on, sooner or later somebody wishes they'd reached a different one, and you're going to continue to see those bills. But I think what we've tried to do, and again with very limited resources, we're a very small department and unfortunately smaller and smaller, we have focused, and especially with the work group that I described to you earlier, we have tried to focus our efforts on working with other agencies, and in this case in the last 2 years with the Economic Development Department, to really look at a whole host of issues that have to do with economic development and land use planning. Those issues were upon us before today for the last 2 years, and that is why I believe you will be pleased to see the work that I think is emerging now from the work group that has grown out of this two-year effort and that is working hard these last couple of weeks on legislation, crafting legislation that will, I think, resolve a series of problems. Problems either that, for whatever reason, there before us, probably because, in many cases, we didn't foresee them. I don't think anybody did. And in some cases, because the answer that we got to the last time we addressed that problem wouldn't be the answer we got to today, given the circumstances we now have. So I think we're always adjusting. We're always having to do that. And, yes, we try our best to do that as, you know, in advance of the problems. We don't always succeed. And that's part of why I support this bill. I think sometimes things come up that might be more quickly addressed by legislation than by our rule processes.
Thank you. Representative
Guy. Can you just share with us briefly who's on the work group and then possibly later give us the information about when you meet and information like that?
I'll do my best off the top of my head. There's others here today, I think, who will testify who can fill in if I forget. But we have cities and counties. We have the governor's office. We have now it seems like every day more agencies are joining in because issues affect multiple agencies. We have Department of Transportation, DEQ, Economic Development. We have John Chandler and Tom Gallagher representing development interests. We have Harlan Levy and with Realtors. Thousand Friends of Oregon is at the table. Metro is there. I think that's the bulk of it. I may have forgotten somebody.
Sounds like a real work group.
It is, and we've been meeting frequently, and we've made some progress, and hopefully in the next couple of weeks we'll have product to begin showing you.
Great. Thank you. Do you want to go ahead, Mr.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Ron Fox. I'm the manager of business and industry programs for the State Economic Community Development Department. I want to give you just a little bit of my background. Prior to joining the department, I worked for Pacific Corps, and about 10 years ago, I was one of the co-authors of the Oregon Mill Sites Project, which brought together a broad cross-section of partners to look at just exactly these types of sites. And that project, over a period of two-year period of time, using commitments from Pacific Corps, Federal Economic Development Administration, the Economic Development Department, U.S. Bank, and Stoll Reeves Attorney, we evaluated 13 abandoned mill sites across Oregon. And this issue of urban services or urbanization outside of the urban growth boundaries was an issue at that time. So it's not, as I've mentioned, it is not an issue that has just appeared in a short short period of time. Let me say this, that one of my responsibilities in the department is to manage the inbound investment opportunities from businesses looking to Oregon as a possible site for business investment. We handled the early stage evaluation of Oregon for the Cardinal Glass project that Dave Harlan and his team spoke about, and I guess I want to say they have done an excellent job of overcoming hurdles that might otherwise have made the Hood River site, the handled project, unacceptable to that particular project, but they've done it in conjunction with their other partners in a very, very expeditious way. As a department, we are, as I was mentioned, we are very actively involved in the implementation of the recommendations coming from the House Bill 3557 Task Force. We strongly support the evaluation of former mill sites as potential industrial sites. Right now, we're engaged in an effort in conjunction with Governor Kulongowski's Industrial Lands Initiative to look at potential industrial sites across the state and identify those that have near-term potential to be ready for industry to build on and to site on. When we handle projects like the Cardinal Glass, their expectations are that we're going to be able to show them sites that they can evaluate, consider, and make a decision to begin construction in a very, very short period of time. Some prospects would require 60 days. Most of them are willing to work within a six-month window that all of the issues are resolved in that period of time. In regards to the mill sites, as mentioned earlier, there's over 100 of them, I think, that have been identified by various efforts. There are many that are on our current list that we're evaluating. Some of these are in proximate location to municipal services. A lot of them are great distance from municipal services. Some of them have some service capacity currently on the sites. The site in Odell, as was mentioned earlier, had a water system on the site but did not have a municipal sewer system. Some of these sites are so far removed from municipal services, they really depended upon wells and septic tanks. So in terms of making these ready for industry to build on, it's going to require a site-by-site evaluation and a look at the costs and the implications of public infrastructure or alternate services to make those sites suitable for modern industry application. When a prospect is considering a site, the time to certainty is absolutely critical. So to the extent that these sites can be cleared for the kind of commercial business development that are contemplated on these mill sites, that's absolutely critical to maintaining a competitive position for Oregon. The infrastructure question, our department provides funding for a great deal of the public infrastructure that supports economic development across the state. And as I mentioned earlier, that's a limited source, and it needs to be applied effectively. So to the extent that certain of these sites require great expenditure would be a consideration, but it has to be something that makes it viable in the marketplace and suitable for meeting the kind of industry needs that are considering both existing Oregon companies as well as companies that are coming to Oregon from out of the area. I think I'll stop there, and I'll be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Fox. Any questions? Representative March.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Fox, you said you had already evaluated 13 sites, and you're currently evaluating 100?
No, I spoke, Madam Chair, Representative March, I spoke about two in efforts. My previous position with the Pacific Corps, we were engaged in this cooperative Oregon Mill Sites project that through this joint funding and effort actually evaluated 13 separate sites around the state of Oregon, from Astoria to Klamath Falls, all over the state. The current effort that I mentioned is an effort to sort of bring some closure to the question that Representative Gallegos mentioned earlier, the distance between an inventory in Oregon communities of industrially zoned land and industrially zoned sites that are ready for industry to occupy and use. That's the immediate initiative that's focused on with the governor's initiative, is closing that gap between inventory and ready supply. And that, frankly, is one of the factors that limits our ability to really represent to prospects Oregon's ability to deliver on industry.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I just have one quick question. Of the 13 that you evaluated, how many were ever redeveloped?
Ooh. Madam Chair, Representative of the Committee, I knew you were going to ask me that question.
Oh.
It's been one. I can speak to one because it's the one that comes to mind. In Astoria, the Astoria Plywood Facility, it was a cooperative plywood mill right adjacent to the downtown in Astoria. That site was a significant brownfield. It had been contaminated by industrial uses. That site was ultimately cleaned up, redeveloped for commercial and residential housing, and today is a center of housing and development in that community. That's the one I can think of. I'm sure I can think of, bring more examples to the, of the 13.
Maybe Mr. Burton.
Mike's got a better memory.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, my name is Mike Burton. I'm the Assistant Director of the Economic and Community Development Department. I'm aware of four sites that are currently in use or being built on. They include Oak Ridge, Coquille, another one down on the coast, and then the Astoria side.
Okay. Thank you. So with 164 of them, there's great potential, and I guess that's why, the local control or the local option is why this bill is important. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Carrie McLaren and Randy Tucker. Is it me? I don't know. It's too many headaches. No. My ears are ringing. I'm glad somebody else can. Thank you and welcome.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name, for the record, Randy Tucker, Legislative Director for 1000 Friends of Oregon. And I believe I know you all, at least from testifying before you. For over two decades, 1000 Friends has worked to ensure that Oregon's land use laws provide a framework for economic development for our state. We were integral to the process of drafting the rules that put teeth into Goal 9, the economic development goal. In the current climate, we're obviously as interested as everybody else in the state in using our land use program to help spur economic recovery. And we strongly agree with this comment by Mr. Harlan a few minutes ago that good land use planning is a competitive advantage for our state. We are participating, as Mr. Rindy said, in the work group. Actually, we also, one of my colleagues, Mary Kyle McCurdy, our staff attorney on urban development, was a member of the task force that Mr. Rindy referred to develop that report coming out of House Bill 3557 from last session. And we are participating in the work group on industrial land sites that was mentioned by Mr. Rindy. We don't want rural lands and smaller communities to be left out of the economic development picture in our state, and so that's why we're here today. We do want to be very careful to work on the issues related to these kinds of sites, however, in a way that is consistent with good planning, because these are the lands, both in terms of protecting our important working resource lands that provide the economic base for much of our state, as well as in ensuring that we make efficient use of our scarce public dollars for economic development and infrastructure. So with that, I'd like to introduce my colleague, Carrie McLaren, who is our staff attorney on farm, forest, and rangeland issues.
Awesome. Thank you all for the opportunity to testify on this bill today. As Randy said, I, generally speaking, work on farm, forest, and rangeland issues because this is a rural one that came to me, and I'm pleased to be working on it. We do have some concerns about the bill as it's currently drafted, both in terms of some of the definitions as well as the scope, but this is certainly a bill that we'd like to work on, and numerous other people have commented on or suggested perhaps a work group or some other future discussions, and we would be pleased and very happy to work on those. Maybe as a way of providing some context to that general statement, we've heard a lot today about the Hanel Mill site and the fact that it is both located in close proximity to existing services and has some infrastructure on site. But that's not necessarily going to be the case on all of these abandoned mill sites. And so I think we need to opportunity to take a step back and look at what those sites are, talk about maybe some proximity restrictions, or other ways where we might better focus both our investment dollars for public facilities that would need to serve these sites, as well as really target communities around the state and rural communities who need economic development opportunities. We also need to remember, and I think Representative March brought this up in his earlier questions, that many of these sites are located where they are because they were once dependent upon a rural resource, forestry or farming, and that perhaps where some of these abandoned mill sites are may not be very conducive to neighboring working agricultural lands or forest lands. And so I think we also want to bring that in and make sure that we're not causing conflicts or development pressure in a place where that's unnecessary to do so. I specifically, with respect to the amendments that were proposed today, we support the I guess deletion, I would say, of and the focus of looking just at industrial lands or lands that have already been identified as industrial lands and not necessarily expanding this to Goal 3 and Goal 4 sites, abandoned mill sites. But as I said, we still do have some definitional issues that we would be happy to work on with people and address. That's all I have in terms of specific comments. If people have any questions for either one of us, we'd be pleased to answer them.
Any questions? Representative March. How did I know you'd have a question?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just full of them.
You are.
Not quite what we did.
I knew that, but I cleaned it up for the listening audience. In particular, what definitions would you see as being helpful to work on? And probably the proximity one's probably a little more difficult to explain, so we might ask you to come back with that.
Madam Chair, Representative March, one I might say is, it would be helpful actually now, before I did not have an idea of what all the abandoned mill sites were, this is helpful in trying to maybe build a scope for what would be a good and appropriate definition of an abandoned mill site. There are, you know, if I was to say this hypothetically, you know, there are mills that have existed before that were temporary mills. I think broadly written, the bill currently could potentially be viewed to cover any temporary mill site. I grew up in Coos County. You know, there are a lot of smaller mill sites that we might not want this, maybe wouldn't even be good sites because of their size for industrial uses, that we wouldn't want this bill to focus on. Secondly, I guess it's in the original bill, it's in it's in subsection 5 of the amendments. I can find it there. It talks about permitted uses of the site. I think the clear intent of this bill is to focus on industrial uses. So we'd want to make sure that permitted uses didn't include commercial or residential uses. You know, just things like that to really direct this bill towards its objective.
Sure.
Thank you. You also mentioned the potential incompatibility of an industrial site and the adjoining operations of farmers. The Cardinal site sounds perfect because they're not a pollution producing. Doesn't sound like they'd have any be spewing out anything that would hurt the surrounding orchards. But there are probably some other kinds of industrial sites that would not fit that definition. Is there any way of how would we frame something like that?
Madam Chair, Representative March, that's one I might have to come back to you more on. I mean, an easier example might be talking about some siting standards or just directing that probably would already be applicable, but to make sure that there'd be appropriate setbacks for farmers. Cardinal Glass, you know, the Hannah Mill site is in an area of really that is already almost effectively part of Odell. If you were to start talking about a more remote mill site, you might be increasing development pressure out there, which would cause, you know, land speculation, increased cost for farmers. The increased traffic and whatnot might also impede their operations. So those were more the things that I was immediately addressing, but yours are well taken as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam
Chair.
We'll
be in touch.
Look forward to working with you on this.
Thank you. Burton Wiest. Well, I don't know. I think you could.
Give him 2 minutes.
I don't have a watch. Go ahead.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, I'm Burton Wiest. I'm here today on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. We have roughly 1,000 members of our association that are special districts around the state. There's 26 kinds of special districts, but they're relevant to our sanitary and water districts to today's discussion. We have approximately 45 sanitary districts around Oregon, most of which provide sanitary services in rural communities or outside urban growth boundaries, as well as urban sewer districts such as Clean Water Agency in Washington County, which provides sewer to, I think, nearly 20 cities. So we do have a lot of sewer districts around the state that do have rural lands, or at least lands around and outside of urban growth boundaries affected. We also have 240 water districts that provide water services predominantly in rural areas, but also in the urban parts of the state. This bill, we're here in support of this bill. This bill addresses an issue that has been extremely frustrating to sanitary districts in particular for a number of years. Current land use rules do not restrict water districts and the provision of water services outside of urban growth boundaries. We have water systems that supply farmers, and indeed farms couldn't even exist in some areas if they didn't have access to public water systems. However, sanitary sewer, as this committee knows and as this bill addresses, we cannot hook up anyone outside of an urban growth boundary, even if that property is within an existing sanitary district. In cases where we have industrial properties that are inside our district or immediately adjacent to our district that are either existent industrial properties or future industrial or abandoned mill sites, as this bill addresses, is extremely frustrating for us to not be able to hook those industrial uses up to provide for their expansion, or in this case to provide for them to actually create new jobs and create industry. So we are very appreciative of the chair and for introducing this measure, and we think it'll go a long ways towards addressing some of, I guess, our frustrations in the process. We are believers that if you are in a sanitary district, then you should have a right to have that service, obviously under certain conditions, to make sure that we meet basic land use requirements. I would only conclude by turning it over to Ken by saying just one thought for this committee. In order to site a new industry on an abandoned mill site in an area with 10% unemployment, it shouldn't require a bill and an act of the legislature to do it. And I hope you'll take action on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Reist. Any questions? Mr. Armstrong.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ken Armstrong. I'm here representing the Oregon Ports Group. As I think most of you know, there are 23 ports in the state of Oregon. We're here to join the chorus in support of House Bill 2691, specifically on behalf of one of my members, the Port of Hood River. We think, I agree with everything that you've already heard said today in support of this bill. The only points I'd like to emphasize is that this is a very narrow bill. It deals with a narrow issue that we think is critically important. In the case of ports, these are entities throughout the state, on the coast and on the Columbia River, that have traditionally relied heavily on natural resource industries. And with the downturns in the fishing industry and, of course, in the wood products industry, there are several of these sites out there. We think it's critically important for us to do our job and to help meet what is right now such a high priority of job creation in the state, to see these facilities get turned around and put into productive use. This bill does that, or at least gives us the platform from which to make that happen. And so we want to very enthusiastically join the chorus and say us too. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
John Chandler. Welcome, Mr. Chandler.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. John Chandler with Legislative Advocates here on behalf of the Urban Developers Coalition and a few other interested parties in support of House Bill 2691. This is, as Mr. Weiss has indicated, it is a shame we have to bring legislation forward to fix what seems to some of us to be an obvious problem, but it's a good bill. I want to spend a little bit of time with your committee, if you'll bear my indulgence, to talk a little bit about the other projects that are going forward as they relate, at least in my mind, to this bill and to some others. I think it's worth noting, and Mr. Weiss and Mr. Levy both too polite to say so, they've also put in bills or are putting in bills on related topics to rural economic development. Since they had manners and didn't toot their own horns, I'll do it for them. I think those bills will be coming your direction and need to have the same kind of attention that you're giving to this one. This is a narrow approach. It's a good approach. It's fixing a piece of the problem that is affecting rural Oregon in terms of economic development. I'd hate to take a quiz on the other two bills, and this is obviously not a hearing on them, but I believe there is a need for this legislature to think in a broader sense about how we get our economy back running, not just the urban piece, but the rural piece as well. And these three pieces of legislation, 2691 and the other two, I think, are part of that package and should be part of that package as we worked together so that we make sure we have a common set of solutions moving forward. With regard to the urban side, there were some questions and comments made earlier about the House Bill 3557 process from last session in the work group. That was a bill we brought forward on behalf of the Urban Developers Coalition. And the intent, and Representative Gagos raised the question about 20-year land supplies, the issue really wasn't, and we tried to steer very clear of whether it should be a 20-year land supply or not, but to take a look at what tools were available to local governments to make sure they had enough commercial industrial land within their boundaries. And it's important to keep in mind, 2691 deals for the most part with lands outside of urban growth boundaries. The other bill that we were talking about now was inside. And so the idea of economic development is the same. The way you deal with it in terms of the regulatory environment and the particular solutions brought there, I think, are going to differ. What we found, as Mr. Rindy told you, was we've done a pretty fair job of identifying long-term land supplies. We've done a pretty poor job of short-term. And that's what we're trying to get to. There'll be bills coming your direction. Chair Smith and Chair Metzger from the Senate have co-sponsored another piece of legislation, Senate Bill 467, which at the moment is simply a placeholder. That's the work group's vehicle. It'll be coming across to you in due course, I hope. And what we're trying to do there, again, as with this bill, is to come up with a solution of thinking about our land use system somewhat differently, thinking about our economic development system differently, our transportation system, our wetlands, all the regulatory environment that affects economic development, and try to make sure, without changing the goals, I want to stress that, and we'll talk about this throughout the session, we're not trying to change any of the goals or the objectives of the state that we've cited for livability or for sustainability or environment, but to make the processes work better, to get faster and smarter, and recognize that in a, particularly in a down economy, it is essential to deliver a product in a timely fashion to the marketplace that we can get our people back to work. And that's the objective. It is not an attempt to say, as long as we're in a slump, let's go ahead and do it with the Clean Water Act. It's an attempt to make the Clean Water Act work better. There's a number of other bills, Madam Chair, if I may just talk. I have two more little speeches I want to make here, very short. There's a number of other ideas floating around dealing with midterm and long-term fixes to our systems. You'll be seeing those as they go through. The transportation and infrastructure funding packages that will be coming in front of you are critical. This bill deals with a small part of that problem. If you're going to have an abandoned mill site and be able to get people back to work there, they have to have water and sewer. They're going to have a road to drive on. This bill doesn't really address it other than implicitly. I think it'll make it simpler by allowing for the connections to occur without it being considered an urban use. But on a broader scale, nothing we do this session on economic development is going to do a lick of good if we don't have a way to pay for the infrastructure, a way to provide the roads. There's going to be a bill coming through on periodic review reform, fixing the way DLCD looks at plans. All of this, then, my last little pitch I'm going to make, Madam Chair, and thank you for indulgence. I'm trying to take this opportunity whenever I get in front of a committee. This session, the Ways and Means process is disconnected somewhat from the substantive committees. In other words, there's not as much overlap as there has been in sessions past. All we're talking about, everything we're talking about here, you had Mr. Rindy and Mr. Fox from EDD. Other bills you're going to be considering, we'll have other agency folks here. They have to be able to have enough funding to do their jobs. If we're going to ask them to identify lands or to ask them to do rulemaking to make rural development easier or whatever it might be. So it's important to keep that in mind. And I realize it's a short money session. I'm not here to sell anything in particular other than just bring that issue to your awareness that the substantive piece of what we're talking about as far as reforming agency structure and making the process work better and the money piece of making sure that we're able to pay for what we say we want done have to move forward in tandem. This committee is not a Ways and Means committee, but if for this purpose it may as well be, because what you are going to be doing in here throughout this session on this bill and others are going to be setting up work tasks for these agencies and for local governments, and if we're not willing to back that up with enough funding, then we need to readjust what we're telling them to do, because that's part of what got us in this soup in the first place. And I think there's some paths out. I think this bill is a wonderful piece of it that starts looking at a creative way of fixing a problem that's very real in the state. There's more coming, and I will be glad to come back and visit with you when they get here. I'll hush, and if you have any questions, I'll be glad to respond to them.
Any questions? You must have covered it all.
Thank you very much. Marks must not love me anymore. He didn't ask me a question. Thank you very much.
I think he was afraid you might have a long answer. Art Schlack. Welcome.
Thank you. John's always a hard act to follow at this point. I always try to not do that, but...
And he didn't have his guitar.
Please bear with me at this point. I'm Art Schlack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And let me start out by expressing our appreciation to the chair and Senator Metzger for bringing this bill forward. We are in support of House Bill 2691. Probably know there are, and have heard, there's a multitude of abandoned mill sites around the state of Oregon. Those mill sites were recognized when comprehensive plans and zoning was done in the 70s and were acknowledged in the late 70s and through the 80s by the Land Conservation and Development Commission. Those, they're planned and they're zoned for industrial development. The problem that they have faced is, one, the industry to a degree has taken the downturn, which you've heard about, and so you have these sites that have been abandoned over a period of time, and we really need to think about redevelopment of those sites in support of the rural communities, which they supported historically at this point. So it's extremely important that this bill go forward. It is a statewide application. And it provides an opportunity for those sites to look at alternative uses in support of those rural communities. One thing that I would note for the committee, this piece of legislation talks about the extension of services. I would suggest that it also address on-site provision of services. Because in some instances, you may be a long ways, as has been said, from sewer or from a public water line. And there is the opportunity to provide on-site water supply and also on-site...
That's you?
Me, on top of it. The wife said she'd call. Now she called.
Do you want to take the call?
Well, really, for the record.
We'd love to hear it.
You really want me to be in trouble. I already am. I apologize. Oh.
It's okay.
Again, please.
We're
apologize.
All checking.
Yes. Uh-huh. Everybody's checking, and I'm going to my pocket this time. Back to the bill.
Right.
There is the opportunity to provide on-site services. Through the Department of Environmental Quality, you can establish a package treatment plant. The administrative rules that were adopted by LCDC a number of years ago limit the extension of services and also limit the ability to look at on-site package treatment plants. And I would suggest that if we're serious about providing a range of opportunities statewide to redevelop these sites, that we also provide that opportunity with the safeguard, knowing that the Department of Environmental Quality would have to approve any of the facilities that would support these sites. So that's a suggestion I'd be happy to work with Hood River County, the chair of the committee, to look at some amendments to ensure that what we have here can have a statewide application.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? Representative March.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Slack, this actually jogged something that I'm very concerned about, and that's the provision of fire suppression services and in case, you know, emergency services in case there's a fire or an accident on the site. I mean, if we're dealing with sites that are very far removed from urban facility or any of the facilities, say either the fire department or hospital, what, or even an ambulance, would it be within the county's powers and prerogatives to require either on site that they have their own fire department, for example, or their own fire equipment, or an ambulance provision, or something like that?
Madam Chair, Representative March, the state fire marshal has the ability, and the county, through the building permit, has the ability to address fire safety kinds of issues. So I think I would suggest to you that a question of fire safety can be addressed through those provisions at this point. I do not believe that a county would have the authority at this point to require a company to have an ambulance on site at this point.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Thank you very much. And again, my apologies.
No, that's okay. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else here who wants to testify on House Bill 2691? Mr. Kerfora? Sure. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Kerfora. I'm here today representing the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association, with land use planners, and people who are involved in planning. We have both public and private employers but interested in this issue. I don't have a particular position on this bill at this point. It just hasn't happened. It's not that we have to take a look at it and decide not to. But I did want to comment on Representative Richardson's question, which I think hasn't received really as thorough an answer as it should have. I think perhaps when he asked, you know, why hasn't LCDC been on top of this, I think Mr. Rindy probably felt a little constrained from speaking as bluntly as he wanted to, and that was because you guys haven't given us the money to. If you take a look at the history of LCDC's budget, it's been very, very difficult funding for years, and as we're getting into tighter times, it gets smaller. And not only are their budgets being constrained, but the budgets of local governments are constrained. And when people take a look at, you know, when they put their money into local services that are needed right now versus planning, oftentimes planning gets shortchanged. And we're now seeing kind of the result of that years of neglecting the money we should have been into planning as we find ourselves short on industrial land supply. There is a meeting this fall in Portland. I'm sure, in fact, some of you may have been there, when a huge number of business people came from around the state. They expected a couple hundred, and it was like a couple thousand people showed up. And the group they're talking about land use planning was interesting what they came up with. They said that, you've heard this several times today, that good land use planning is a really strong advantage to our competitive efforts to get industry here in the state and to maintain industry that we have. They went on to say, here's what we'd like to see, and they talked a lot about things that ought to be done in terms of increasing industrial land supply, and as I looked through that list, almost every single one of them cost money. It costs money for land use planning, both at the state level and for grants from LCDC, which they used to be able to give and don't give much as many anymore to local governments, so they could do their planning. John Chandler talked about the need to put money into the hard things, you know, bringing services to industrial areas, and that's one source of money absolutely that's essential. But before you get there, somebody has to say, where are these sites going to be and which ones are good and which ones are not good, and that takes resources. So I hope that, as Mr. Chandler said, this committee will pretend that it's a subcommittee of Ways and Means and pass that message on to those folks who make those money decisions.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. McCoy? Thank you very much. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2691. In committee, I might just, we're going to work on a few items on this, and then it will be back. So, great. Thank you very much. I'm going to move on. We open a public hearing on House Bill 2300. Mr. Burton.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and okay. Thank you. I think we're going to let you explain this one. Thank you.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, my name is Mike Burton. I'm the Assistant Director of the Economic and Community Development Department, and I'm here to present testimony on an agency bill. We call this our omnibus bill or our housekeeping bill. And the good news is, I think, like the last one I was here to talk about, it's not as bad as it looks. It does reflect the range of activities undertaken by the department on behalf of Job Creation Oregon. And because a question was presented to me as a consequence of the testimony in House Bill 2299, we brought for you a copy of the agency's annual report. This is half of the required biennial report. We're not done with the biennium, so we're not bringing you a full report. But I would bring your attention to pages 5 through 11. Starting on page 5 is a description, a very summary description of the department's activities on behalf of economic development in the first year of this biennium. Closing out that section is the current version of the department's strategic plan, which was worked up by staff and approved by the commission at a December commission meeting. I think they do a good job of explaining why we do what we do, and by the way, we're pretty good at it. We get a lot done. I think it's important to point out, or I'd like to point out, that there's a lot of change going on in economic development. There's a lot of attention focused on economic development. There's a new administration. There's a new commission chair. Within a few months, there'll be essentially a new commission. We've got a couple of members that are retiring from the commission. So we believe that the strategic plan is a work in progress, and we're committed to continued adjustments as we go. But I thought we'd start off with presenting you with that information. And more than anything else, given the late time, we wanted to put that in front of you so that you have some background, you have an opportunity to take a look at it and maybe have some more questions if we don't get done today. But it's possible that we might. I'm going to once again move through the bill on a section-by-section basis, and so have identified in my written testimony, which I'm not going to do today, the section, page, and lines that each piece refers to, so that we can all move along together, follow the bouncing ball, and stay in the same place. The first item that I'd like to speak to is related to one of the functions of the department. In the 99 session, Senate Bill 622 was passed that formally got the department into the telecom area using resources from Quest. I think it was U.S. West at the time the bill passed, but became Quest. The department has funded 4 positions. That funding ends at the end of this biennium. However, the department believes that it remains part of the department's purpose to help communities address telecom issues as we move forward. Telecom has become a critical piece of economic activity and therefore economic development. So the bill would ask that you amend the department's purpose to formally recognize telecom as a critical piece of infrastructure. Section 2, page 3.
Should we ask questions before?
Be fine.
If you want to, go ahead.
Madam Vice Chair, Mr. Burton, on the end of Section 1, subparagraph 14, if I take out the irrelevant language, it says, give technical assistance to state and local organizations to provide telecommunication infrastructure and broadband services. And so if I look at that specific language, what kind of technical assistance would be provided and for what purpose?
Chair Gallegos, Representative Richardson, the Quest money was specific to investments that the company would make to enhance telecommunications throughout the state. In many parts of the state, and I can attest to this from personal experience, communities don't have the same access to telecommunications that the market provides in larger metropolitan areas. And some people would say that Portland's not a larger metropolitan area in that regard. So when you get to the Lake Views and John Day's, many communities don't understand what the options are, what the possibilities are, nor the mechanisms that would be required to realize those opportunities. So the department has, through the Quest resources, employed a couple of individuals who are experts in telecommunications to keep up on what's going on in the industry, and they've been connecting with local communities, helping them understand what's going on and trying to ascertain the level of need for those kinds of services in places where the need's not recognized. The way I personally relate to this is I used to have an office in Lakeview, and I don't know how the rest of you are, but the department's fairly well connected through email. You get most of your news through email. In Lakeview, because of the switch in town, I was not able to stay logged on long enough to pick up my emails for the most part, so was not even telecommunicative to the level of being email compatible with most of the agency. At the same time, the agency telecommunications specialist came to Lakeview and said, Mike, we have to figure out how to aggregate demand in Lakeview. What do you think is the demand for telecommunications in Lakeview? And I'm going, I don't know what the possibilities are. I can't begin to help you understand what the potentials are for this community, because I don't know what's available out there. I can't pick up emails. And you want me to help them figure out what it is they might pursue.
In Southern Oregon, Ashland, as you're aware, has assumed responsibility to provide many of these services in direct competition with the private sector. And so I know that other communities are looking at that as well. Does this essentially give OECDD a mandate or an opportunity if a community says, we would like help in establishing our own company, would your advisors be helping them to do that in competition with private enterprise?
Chair Gallegos, Representative Richardson. It is possible that we could do that. We understand that there is potentially an amendment being offered to this bill that would clarify, an amendment being offered by telecommunications providers that would clarify our role in that regard. I've not yet seen that. It's not our intention to provide competition to for-profit service providers. However, in much of the state, there's not sufficient market demand to drive a competitive investment. Most businesses are driven by return on investment, and for the most part, there are more significant investments in larger metropolitan markets, which is why Portland's not really a prime-time market. But relative to the rest of the state, it's probably the only real market. So we're not usually helping communities at that level. Ashland, I think, at least so far, is an exception in that regard. And we would not be averse to an amendment that would clarify our role. This is essentially language that was lifted from recommendations by the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. So we've plugged it in to address what they perceive as the need in rural Oregon.
Okay, thank you.
Have you
moved
on?
Mike, if you could address it, is the way this language is worded, it also is intended to give the department authority that you don't currently have to reach out and work with private sector enterprises in the telecommunications field. Is that correct?
Chair Gallegos, Representative Hunt, I don't think that's exactly correct. We have authority to work with. We have authority to do telecommunications now on a programmatic level. We have authority through the Special Public Works Program specifically to do telecommunications. And the reality is that the service is provided in Oregon by private providers. So I believe we do have that authority. This is to clarify, it's intended to clarify that we're going to be doing this stuff. It's my belief that at some point, telecommunications will be treated like any other infrastructure. Water is a good example because mostly in Oregon, water is provided by municipalities or special districts, as we heard a little while ago. But in most of the country, water is provided by for-profit entities. Here it's a function of the market. This is Oregon. Water's everywhere. You can't make money selling it. Or that was the historical case. I think that could be changing. That's not true, absolutely true, with telecommunications, but it is a market-driven situation. Where we've gotten involved historically historically being the last two or three years is how long we've been involved in telecom, has been in markets where there's not enough demand to drive significant investments. The Quest investments have made a big difference in Oregon. Oregon is considered to be the most connected state in terms of telecommunications infrastructure, and that was because Quest made an option and committed, made an option in terms of the rate structure and how they're allowed to charge for services, and committed in return to make a significant investment in markets where specifically the investments were not economically justified. So we've had that that impetus for investment for 4 years. The Quest commitment is ending, and we'd like to continue the role, but specifically in markets where there's not a compelling profit motive to lead Verizon or Quest or whoever to make the investments that would be necessary for comparable service levels.
Can I ask? I'd like to ask you a question then. Were you done? Okay. And it's, again, in the same area. You mentioned OECD has already hired four people to deliver this same. You're providing technical assistance and teaching people how to use these. And where those four people are already on staff and already providing this?
Chair Gallegos, or Vice Chair Gallegos.
I still have it.
I know. Yes, ma'am.
For now. Okay.
The department did hire four people, and that was part of the agreement when Quest made their option in terms of how they were going to be allowed to bill their customers. That funding is ending. We're ramping down. We still have three employees funded by that mechanism. We will not have that resource into the next biennium. So we're specifically looking to clarify that the department needs to provide that service. My expectation is that we will take one of our current regional coordinators, the people who do our project investment on the infrastructure community side, and use that position to employ a telecommunications expert, and that person will continue in the role, but it will be funded with lottery resources.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Chair Smith, members of the committee, it's apparent that we're not going to get done. This is a convenient breaking point. The
okay.
next piece is not very long, so it's at your pleasure that we continue.
We need to
on.
Be out of here by 5 to 3 at the latest, so why don't we go ahead and
Chair Smith, members
then,
of the committee,
and then we'll
let's move
okay.
through that piece because I've got
okay.
someone here who can provide
oh, okay.
technical assistance,
sure.
specific questions, and I won't have to bring them back next time.
That's great.
Okay, the next piece, moving on to Section 2. Actually, I'm going to skip ahead to the small business stuff because starting in Section 4, and next time I'm here, I'll come back to the Sections 2 and 3, but my technical assistance expert's here to address small business stuff specifically, so let's move on to that.
Okay.
That starts on page 4. And relates to the department's business retention service. In this program area, which started out as the Economic Stabilization Act, the department in these days primarily connects with a business that is facing some threat, some extraordinary hurdle, but which still has the premise of viability. It's still a competitive, profitable business usually, but they're in trouble for some reason. Believe that with some assistance, they might be able to survive that trouble. The department makes them a loan, and the company and hires a workout specialist, typically buys 40 hours of consultant time. The consultant connects with the business. They develop a recovery plan or a workout plan. If the plan is successful and the company survives, they pay the department back. If the plan is not successful and the company goes out of business, the department recognizes reality, converts the loan to a grant, and writes it off. So, strictly speaking, we're not clear whether we're meeting the match requirement or not. We'd like some flexibility in how we do that, so that it's we're looking to get past, make sure it's not a project-by-project basis. On a programmatic level, we're okay now, but we'd like some authority to go a little bit beyond that. So we're looking to change a little bit the way the language so that we don't have an issue with the match requirement. On Section 5, there's some language that says the department ought to charge for its services. Typically, the department does not deliver the small business services directly. We contract through service providers, primarily the Small Business Development Center Network. Sandy Cutler was in here a couple weeks ago to speak to that. The Small Business Development Centers are impartially funded by the Small Business Administration, which specifically precludes them from charging fees for counseling services. So while the department agrees with the statute that says ought to charge, there are certain circumstances where ought to is not allowed and other circumstances where ought to creates a problem. We would take that language out and essentially allow our contractors to charge where they can and recognize that they can't always charge. Okay. Section 6 gets to a drift in the department's service delivery model that may well be aggravated given what goes on with small business development centers. But not all of our service providers are public entities. Some of them are for-profit providers. In terms of the state contracting process, some of our assistance is delivered through grants, some of it through personal services contracts, depending on who the provider is and how we're required to structure the deal. In either case, we're moved to performance-based contracts. They deliver the outcomes and we pay them. So we believe that it doesn't really matter what mechanism we use in order to deliver the resource to buy the services that are being provided, but would like the flexibility to make that move and to move to a place where, depending on the nature of the service provider and the service they provide, we don't have to sweat it. We just contract for the outcomes, and once they've delivered the goods and provided documentation to us that the job's done, we would pay them. Okay. Let's see. Moving up.
We've got just a few minutes left.
So. Okay. Well, I've got one more section under this topic area. Okay. Okay, on Section 7, page 6, there is a 1995 requirement that the department have an independent assessment done of small business program each biennium. We've done that consistently. We did an assessment this October. However, this is a redundant measure. We have overall department reporting requirements in a different part of the statute. I can refer you to that if you'd like me to. But This piece is very prescriptive and tells us how to do it, what will be addressed, and it's created a situation where we don't have direct comparability in our accountability measures. We'd like the flexibility. We'd like to drop this requirement and go back to the more general overall reporting requirements contained in 285A050. And use a similar approach for all of our reporting, so we're comparing apples and apples. And so this part of the bill would give us the authority, would eliminate this duplicate requirement, this more explicit requirement, to go back to the general requirement. Okay. If you have questions on any of the small business pieces, this is Pat Allen, who's our small business manager, is here and would be happy to come up and answer the questions I may have created.
No questions? I don't see any.
Okay.
You must have done very well. Thank
More
you.
More people want to get on with it.
Thank you.
All right. I'll be back to see you later.
Yeah.
There's one that okay. I'll have to come back and address, and that's what he just has dealt with. I mean, there's a reason why this was put in.
Right.
And so, Madam Chair, Mr. Burton, this was put in for a reason. They're asking for an independent evaluation and a report to the legislature. Correct? On an ongoing basis, and your recommendation is that isn't necessary after all, and so we ought to just take it out. Would you mind explaining why?
Chair Smith, Representative Richardson. The blanket assessment the department does is based on, among other things, an independent assessment. We do a customer service survey for all of our customers, and there is an override. This section I referred to is specifically the overriding biennial reporting requirement that is embodied in this document. This is the outcome of the requirement. That requirement remains in place in the statute, and we will continue to report with an independent assessment and a biennial reporting requirement. But we don't believe that we need the additional requirements of this chief. They were added to different pieces at different times. It may surprise you to know that almost every session we get additional performance requirements. We discuss them with you, and then you decide that we need those additional requirements. So there's been an expanding list of requirements. We believe that we're already covering the base materially and would like to use the same methodology we're using everything else.
Mr. Allen.
Just very quickly, Patrick Allen with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. When the 1995 provision was put in, it was in a context of a relatively low level of reporting and performance measurement tracking in a variety of other department programs, and that was the reason that it was put in, was a desire, because we were using third parties to deliver service, to have a high level of accountability. Since that time, as Mr. Burton has alluded to, the rest of the reporting and tracking in the rest of the agency and in the rest of statute has caught up and in many cases surpass this requirement. And so what we're trying to eliminate is not the accountability, but the disconnect of measuring statutorily different things in different places.
We are going to have another hearing on this next Wednesday, so we could continue it if that works. Thank you. I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2300, and those who have signed up will continue it on Wednesday. Thank you. Seeing no further business before the committee, we're adjourned.